El Paso occasionally finds itself as the topic or locale in major motion pictures or television shows, most of which were shot and produced far from our border community. But many of those productions could have been made here, as the region is home to a large and diverse community of filmmakers. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Today we check up on the health and state of the local independent filmmaking community. My guest is Carlos Corral, co-owner in Mind Warp Entertainment, a local marketing, web design, and video production company, and host of EP Film, a web-based community for borderland filmmakers. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning.
It's been a while since you were in the studio. I know you stay extremely busy, but over the last 8 years, I think we met. It was around 8 years ago when you sent me a copy of your feature film, Hands of God. And from that moment, I programmed it at the one of the first Plaza Classic Film Festivals. But ever since then, you've worked very closely with a number of folks to put together the Local Flavor series at the Plaza Classic Film Festival every year, which really spotlights the work, both shorts and feature-length work of local filmmakers. So you've probably seen more local films in the last 8 years than anybody I know.
I have, and actually, I've really seen it grow. Actually, I remember actually when The Good, the Bad, and the Indie kind of merged with the Plaza Classic Film Festival, and originally we would just only have enough local content just to program kind of one program.
But as 2 hour program,
yeah, 1 2 hour program. But now as the years have gone by, we've exploded to almost 3 to 4 programs. And then that's not even including feature films that are usually locally brought in. Just this last year, I mean, we were at capacity for The Good, the Bad, and the Indie Volume 11. And we also had two other programs called Shorts 1 and Shorts 2, where we showed other short films. They're a little bit longer than 10 minutes, but they were still very high in quality. And just kind of seeing that jump, you know, from 2007, 2008 to now, 2015, I think has been really amazing.
You think that's indicative of the film community growing and the output growing, or that filmmakers have found you as an outlet for their screenings, or both?
I want to say it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, it's always, you know, I'm very happy that the Plaza gives us independent filmmakers a home, you know, every year in August. And, but at the same time, I also want to say technology kind of helped out with that. Now, when I made Hands of God back in 2008, you know, the DSLR revolution had not happened yet. So you could imagine, I'm like, man, had I just waited one more year, my film would have looked totally different. But I think that's also kind of been something that's been kind of unique. And actually, even this year for Good, the Bad, and the Indie Volume 11, I think we had 4 short films that were all shot on cell phones, and they were really good. And that's kind of something amazing, just how technology has been kind of driving the art form in a way.
That's a really great point, because 8 years doesn't seem like that long. It feels like I just met you the other day, but 8 years in technological terms, as you mentioned, with the DSLR revolution and even with our cell phone cameras, has really democratized storytelling for film and moving images.
Oh, yeah, and essentially. And I think that's what's great is that, you know, these tools are kind of right in the hands of every filmmaker now. So it's really just a matter of how can you tell the story. I mean, there are even apps on your phone that will edit movies and add special effects and all sorts of stuff. But yeah, but I think it's great. There's also a lot of other things, you know, like I know we also have the Ghost Life 48-Hour Film Festival. Yeah. That also happens as well. So it's really kind of cool that we get to keep filmmakers busy in the summertime, because that usually happens in June and then our event is in August. So it's really kind of cool that everyone kind of stays busy year-round and they kind of gear up for the screenings at both of these events.
So it seems like the community is growing and stable. But over those years, have you seen any trends or changes in the types of films being made?
I have seen the quality go up a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's really due to, I think, the matter of filmmakers being able to network with one another. I saw the biggest probably quality jump come up after, I want to say, 2013. And then again, 2014, just because what we've been using the events now, we host them now in the Community Foundation Room as part of the festival. And that's kind of like a nice, you know, I don't want to say not private hall, but, you know, kind of a nice theater room where, you know, we have, you know, a bar and everything, and everyone can kind of socialize and mingle. And usually after we've screened the films, I try to encourage all the filmmakers network with one another, because I guarantee you will be working with someone in this room next year on another movie. And that's happened already to me myself. You know, I've met brand new filmmakers like Diego Rico, Jaime Blanco, Robert Robles, Isaac Marquez. Like, there's just so many that I've met, and I ended up working with them, and I've been working with them for the last, it's hard to imagine that, wow, it's been a whole year now. And I've already worked on like 3 or 4 projects with these guys all together, and it's been so much fun. So that's the biggest resource I guess I can tell filmmakers, is that when you come to an event like this, especially at the Plaza Classic, the Local Flavor Series, you're going to meet so many different people. And that's kind of what I encourage, because everyone's got different resources. But when you pull all those resources together, that's when you make something amazing. And that's the quality jump I've seen.
So I wonder how we compare to other cities. As an outsider, I'm not a filmmaker, but I know a lot of filmmakers. And what you're saying rings true, that I often find them collaborating with one another. Somebody needs lights and somebody else has those lights and they borrow them, or their camera, or, you know, somebody's running sound for somebody else's film, but then that person is shooting video for, you know, the first guy's film, and back and forth. It seems like the community here is maybe a little more tight-knit and cooperative and less in competition with one another, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, I could say that. You know, I lived in Austin for, you know, about 8 years, you know, starting in 2002 when I went to college there. And yeah, the film scene is very different there than it is here in El Paso. You know, here in El Paso, because it's a little bit, it is a little bit smaller, but that's not really a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, because
it hasn't affected the quality.
No, not at all. And actually it was kind of cool that I mentioned two filmmakers, Leo Aguirre and Diego Rico. They both screened their films, El Fuego Detrás and Sunrise, at the Cine de las Americas Film Festival in Austin. And I think even some of the people there were amazed that, whoa, there's two filmmakers from El Paso?
Right.
Like, and are you guys all kind of like a tight-knit group?
And it's not just the two that exist.
Yeah, no. And exactly. But there's so many here. But I thought that was really cool when they told me that. And even Leo, who was here last year but has since gone on to UT Austin, even he kind of told me, like, yeah, the Austin film scene is a little bigger, but you can get pretty lost here very quickly. Mm-hmm. He kind of misses El Paso. And he's even said, yeah, once I'm done writing this feature I want to come back and shoot it in El Paso, because I know more of the people there more intimately.
Sure.
You know, so I guess that's kind of the good thing we have going forward. It is a smaller community, but it's very intimate, that if you just meet the right people, you know, your films are going to all of a sudden jump to a whole different level.
So one of the pathways, as you and I have seen, are young filmmakers, oftentimes in high school, are getting into making films, and those get screened locally, and they often follow that dream off to school that takes them away from El Paso. Some of them come back, and whether they come back or whether they always stayed here, I guess is the largest challenge still facing filmmakers, how to make a living here in El Paso.
Yeah. yeah, that's actually kind of interesting, because I kind of saw that challenge after I graduated from UT Austin in 2007. Hands of God was kind of born from that. Mm-hmm. It's, well, I think I'm going to go, you know, after I graduated, I stuck around Austin for a little while, but I ended up writing this feature, and I figured, you know what, I'm probably going to go back to El Paso and shoot this there, because I knew a lot more people there. And so I went back and we shot it there. I edited while I was in Austin, but then I think after the premiere, after two sellout shows that I had at the Plaza, I'm like, you know what? I probably should come back here.
Yeah.
And,
great,
you know,
support.
Yeah. It was really kind of eye opening. And, in 2010 is finally when I came back after we screened it in 2009.
So. Well, it seems to me your own experience is kind of indicative of what I often see with a lot of filmmakers, is other than having a completely unrelated day job as an option and then doing your filmmaking at nights and weekends on your own time, it seems like a lot of them, really the main pathway for a career is to do something like what you're doing, which is create a video production house, work in commercial work. There's a lot of companies here that need moving images made for them, both social media as well as broadcast. So you do commercials, but then you find that pays the bills, and then you find time to work on personal projects. Is that really the crux of maybe what filmmakers, if they want to keep their hands in making things during the day and being paid for that, it's really just commercial work that's allowing that to happen?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, I kind of see it as this, you know, a 30-second commercial is just you telling a story in 30 seconds. It's very short, but it has to be done. But I mean, like, even while I was editing Hands of God, I was working part-time at the ABC affiliate in Austin, K-View. So, you know, even then, I know plenty of filmmakers who do TV here, and they're still kind of doing their craft in the off hours. And yeah, I split between that and then also doing commercial work, because especially now with the rise of our phones And, mm-hmm. you know, again, YouTube was something that was brand new. Right. When I graduated in 2007, I think YouTube was only about 2 years old. It came out in 2005. So just all that content and branding and, right. and web video was just a brand new avenue. And it started to become something that I was able to do and then get paid for it. And even now, that's kind of what we've done now. You know, while I still do TV commercials every now and then, you know, web video and corporate video has kind of been the big one now.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I've stayed and paid the bills, and I've kind of kept my edge as a filmmaker, you know, because even when you're doing commercials, you still got to do audio, you still got to do sound, you still got to edit. So it does keep you on the edge
yeah.
when it comes to our ever evolving film industry, because, you know, again, you know, you'll buy one camera, it's obsolete 6 months.
Right.
You'll buy a computer, it's obsolete in 6 months. So it's always kind of cool that you're doing stuff and then keeping your filmmaking
honing
edge.
Your skills.
Yeah,
there.
You keep honing your skills and keeping your film edge so that when it comes time to do the art projects, you know, you're already ready to go.
When we first met with your feature film, you know, it would have been almost unheard of to host or screen your films or make them available, self-distribute online. Now, there are so many opportunities for filmmakers to put their work out there that doesn't rely on, you know, the major legacy companies to give you a deal. I wonder if local filmmakers, if it's been a boon to allowing them to get their work in front of eyes, but they still face huge challenges differentiating their work from the millions and millions of other pieces of content being loaded every day.
Yeah, that actually is a challenge in and of itself, especially now because, you know, when I made Hands of God, I didn't really have a distribution plan. But a couple of years later, boom, Amazon Video's out. Mm-hmm. I can upload it myself, and it's a 50-50 split. So,
yeah.
you know, if I put my movie up for $2, you know, and somebody buys it, then Amazon gives me $1.
And if you're willing to hustle and go market it yourself.
If I'm willing to hustle and go market it myself and everything. But that's still kind of cool versus because I've always heard stories of distributors. Oh, yeah, they'll offer you kind of a little bit cash incentive, then take it, but then the movie's no longer yours.
But that's a huge leap from just a decade ago where you might have made your feature film and shown it to family and friends and then nothing.
You
had no opportunity to ever put it in front of people again.
Yeah, and that's not really the case now. And actually, I remember too when I saw Omar Rodriguez Lopez's film, The Sentimental Engine Slayer, I believe we screened it at the Plaza
yeah.
and we saw it there. And then just, I think about a year and a half later, he just uploaded it for free on YouTube. And I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of cool that the distribution power is kind of in the hands of the filmmakers now. And I've actually had this dilemma come up where a filmmaker makes a film and I think it's really good. And they said, yeah, so I'm going to start submitting it to Sundance, to South by Southwest
right,
and all this kind of stuff, the festival circuit. And then I'll ask them, well, when are you going to put it online? And they said, well, probably after the festival circuit. I'm like, so you've made this great movie and you're going to wait an entire year until people see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the thing now is that what do you do now? Do you release it right away or do you do the festival circuit and then release it?
So I guess to sum up, sounds like El Paso is a very rich environment for filmmaking and the community has a very cooperative spirit. Still some challenges to make a living here, but things are looking up.
Things are evolving here, so I'm pretty sure people will be able to start to make a living. At least I've found a way to make a living for video production, but it is difficult and you do got to hustle.
Well, I know you're a hustler and thanks for coming in, Carlos. It's always great to catch up with you.
Thank you.
I've been discussing the state of the local independent filmmaking community with Carlos Corral, co-owner of Mind Warp Entertainment and host of EP Film, a local resource for connecting filmmakers in the border region. You can see some of Corral's work at his website at mindwarpllc.com, and you can stay up to date on filmmaking announcements and opportunities by liking EP Film on Facebook. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.